This is the BBC Home Service and the British Forces Network in Germany. Saturday Night Theatre. We present Raymond Huntley, George Merritt and Dennis Hawthorne in The Narrow Corner by Somerset Maugham. Adapted for broadcasting by Howard Agg.
What I'm going to tell you now happened to me a good many years ago when I was living and working in the Chinese city of Fujian. I lived in a shabby little Chinese house over the river amid all the native stenches. A tiny room served me as a surgery, and on the walls hung the Chinese scrolls presented to me by grateful patients. During the time I'd been in Fujian, I'd acquired a reputation among the Chinese for dealing with complaints affecting the eyes, and I was even credited with the uncanny power of making blind people see. Sometimes when I operated on a patient for cataract and the operation was successful, word got round that I'd performed a miracle. This was the reason why I came to undertake a very long journey from Fujian to the island of Takanar in the Malay archipelago. A rich Chinese merchant, Kim Ching, was threatened with blindness, and hearing of my reputation, begged me to come and operate on him, and paid me handsomely to do so. The operation was successful, and afterwards I found myself with nothing to do but sit and twiddle my thumbs until the Dutch ship, which called at the island once a month, arrived. Although time hung rather heavily on my hands, I wasn't discontented. I brought things to read, and it was agreeable to while away the hours sitting under the rattan awning of Kim Ching's store, with a volume of Hakluyt or Peer Hick, and a bottle of beer in front of me. I was sitting reading there one morning when I heard voices, English voices, approaching the store. I looked up surprised, for no ship had come in, and saw two men coming towards me. They were shabbily dressed in dungarees and singlets and had grimy topis on their heads. One of them was middle-aged, with a sallow-lined face, white hair and a scrub of white moustache, hideously decayed teeth, and cunning, restless eyes. His companion was a tall young man, slight but wiry, and extraordinarily good-looking. Seeing me sitting alone, they came up, and the older man addressed me.
This is Kim Ching, ain't it?
Yes.
Is the old boy here?
No, he's sick.
Oh, bad luck. I suppose we can get a drink.
Surely. What'll you have? I'll tell the coolie.
A bottle of beer for me. What about you, Fred?
Same here.
Two beers, Lipo, and bring them out here. Sit down, won't you?
Oh.
Where have you come from?
Oh, we just come in on a lugger from Thursday Island.
A fine weather?
Couldn't want better. A nice breeze and no sea to speak of. Nichols is my name. Captain Nichols. Maybe you've heard of me.
I can't say I have.
Oh, I've been sailing these seas for 30 years. There's not an island in the archipelago I ain't put in at one time or another. I'm pretty well known round here. Kim Ching knows me. Known me for 20 years.
Really?
And this is Fred Blake.
How do you do?
What's the matter with old Kim Ching? I was looking forward to having a bit of a chinwag with him.
He's had trouble with his eyes. That's why I'm here. I've been attending him.
You're a doctor?
I am.
What did you say your name was?
I didn't mention it. It's Saunders.
Saunders, I knew it.
Did you? How?
I knew your face. I could swear I'd seen you somewhere. Fujian, that's where I've seen you.
Possibly, I live there.
What did I tell you? Everyone in Fujian knows Doc Saunders. Best doctor in the Far East, Fred. The Chinese swear by him. You did a job on a pal of mine once, Doc.
Did I?
Yes, everyone said he'd go blind. Nothing could stop it. And now he can see as well as you or me. Well, this is a joyful surprise. Shake hands, Doc. And I don't mind telling you it's a bit of luck for me coming across you like this. Hey, Fred? The Doc's the very man I wanted to meet. I suffer from dyspepsia, something chronic.
Oh, you and your dyspepsia.
Oh, you can talk like that because you don't know what it is. I'm a martyr to it. It's like this, Doc. I enjoy me food, not foul house, mind you. I like it good, and I like it simple. Not a big eater. I've never been that. Cut off the joint, a couple of veg, with a bit of cheese to finish up with, and I'm satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you couldn't eat anything simpler than that, now, could you?
Well,
20 minutes after, rigorous clockwork. Ooh, agony. I tell you, life ain't worth living when you suffer like that. If there's anyone that can do anything for me, it's you. I know that, Doc.
Well, I can't work miracles.
No, yeah, but...
You can't expect anyone to do much in a minute for a chronic condition like yours.
No, I don't ask that, but you can prescribe for me, can't you? There's nothing I won't try. What I'd like you to do is to make a thorough examination of me, see?
How long are you staying here?
Oh, our time's our own.
But we're pushing off as soon as we've got what we want.
You trading?
Yes, in a manner of speaking. If anything comes along, we ain't going to miss a chance. Who wouldn't?
What cargo are you carrying?
Oh, a bit of everything.
Not going to Macassar by any chance?
We might be.
Why?
Oh, I just wondered. Look here, why don't you both come and dine with me tonight? I'm staying at the rest house, about 10 minutes' walk from here, through the plantation. I can get you some sort of meal.
That'd be fine. A change for the lugger, wouldn't it, Fred?
No, you don't want to be bothered with us.
No bother. I'll meet you there about 6.
Don't you worry, Doc. We'll be there. Doc.
I was intrigued by these two strangers who'd so unexpectedly appeared on the island, and curious as to what the connection was between them. Fred Blake didn't at all give the impression of being a born sailor. He was hard to place. Obviously, he was not a roughneck. He had manners and came, I should have said, of a good family. But why he was sailing those lonely seas on a pearling lugger with someone like Captain Nichols was mysterious. If they were in partnership, then I was inclined to think that it wasn't a very honest one, and that Fred Blake would almost certainly come out of it the worse. Purposely, then, I made my way later in the day to Kim Ching's house and paid him a quite unnecessary call, for there was nothing more now that I could do for him. He was lying on his bed under mosquito curtains, slowly waving a fan to and fro in front of his face. The room was hot and airless.
Sit down, Doctor.
Thank you.
I hear we have visitors on the island. A lugger came in this morning.
Yes, it's anchored beside your schooner in the lagoon.
Yes?
The schooner does make it look very small, very shabby.
Why are they here? What do they want?
I don't know.
But I am told that you were talking to them at the store this morning.
Yeah, they stopped for a glass of beer. They say they're trading.
That is not the truth.
Oh?
They have nothing in the lugger but ballast. Stones, my men have told me.
Well, no cargo at all.
Nothing.
Opium, perhaps?
No.
Then they may be here just on pleasure.
Captain Nichols does not sail for pleasure.
Oh, he's been to see you, then?
No, he sent a message saying that he would like to see me, but I refused.
Mm-hmm. He says he knows you well.
Give me your opinion, Doctor.
Of what?
Of Captain Nichols.
You want my honest opinion?
Of course.
Well, I should say he was a bad hand. I think he'd put his hand to anything, clean or dirty. But he is genial and amusing.
He does not amuse me.
No?
I employed him once on one of my schooners. He stole and cheated. He drank. I had to get rid of him. He is mean, crafty, and dishonest.
How does he manage to get work, then?
Some people are not particular. They do not ask questions. And Nichols knows his job. He is a first-rate seaman. For that, I was sorry to lose him.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this man with him?
Someone called Fred Blake. Young, very good-looking, but rather surly, I thought. They're certainly an odd couple. I've asked them to dine with me at the rest house this evening. I'll be able to tell you more about them then.
Will you please give Captain Nichols a message from me?
Of course.
Tell him to get out of here pretty damn quick.
At 6 o'clock, as I'd arranged, I sauntered down to the rest house to meet Captain Nichols and Fred Blake. They were both waiting for me, and we had a drink. The captain was full of small talk and facetious jokes, and I noticed that his shifty eyes were never still, whereas his young friend hardly spoke, and there was a sullen look on his face, as though he'd been dragged there against his will. An adequate dinner had been prepared for us, and before dinner I went to my medicine chest and mixed something in a glass for the captain to help him eat his dinner in comfort.
Well, I must say, this is a treat after what we've had to eat on the lugger.
A real treat.
Well, most of it comes out of tins, I'm afraid, but the boy knows how to flavor it up.
No, it's the best dinner I've had since I left home.
Where is your home?
Brisbane.
Yes. Fred's an Australian. He's got a bit of capital, and he thought he'd like to have a look-see on the chance he might find something in these parts he'd like to invest in. Buy a plantation or do a bit of pearl fishing.
Uh-huh.
I know all these islands inside out, and what I say is there's a rare lot of chances for a young fellow with a bit of capital. That's why we put in here. My idea, that was. It struck me we might do business with old King Chin. I sent him a message saying I'd like to see him and never talk with him.
Yeah, so he told me.
Oh, did he? What else did he say?
Tell me to tell you that you'd better get out of here pretty damn quick.
Well, that's a nice way to talk, I must say. What's he got against me?
My impression is that he's got a good memory.
Well, we had a bit of a disagreement, I'll own that. But it was donkeys years ago. Well, there's no sense in holding the thing up against a fella all that while. Forgive and forget, I say. Live and let live. Oh, do you know? I don't believe I'm going to have dyspepsia tonight.
Oh, I don't think you will.
You're a magician, Doc.
Thank you.
What was that stuff you gave me?
Oh, a little preparation I found useful in cases like yours.
Do you think you could cure me?
I don't know about that. But if I could watch you for a few days and try one or two things, I might be able to do something for you.
I've a good mind to stay on here for a bit and let you see. We're in no hurry.
What about Kim Ching?
Well, he can't force me to clear out.
Well, you ought to know Chinamen as well as I do, Captain, if they've got their knife in.
To hell with that. It was only a matter of a couple of £100. Old Kim's as rich as be damned. Now, what difference can that make to him? He's an old crook anyway.
Have you ever noticed that nothing hurts the feelings of a crook so much as to have another crook do the dirty on him?
That's a good one. I like you, Doc. You don't mind what you say, do you? Well, it takes all kinds to make a world.
Indeed.
Keep your eyes skinned, I say, and let the devil take the hindmost. And where you see a chance of making a bit, well, you're a fool if you don't take it. Now then, what about me and Kim Ching and staying on here for a bit?
Oh, eh? Come off it, Nichols. We're not going to risk running into trouble here. We're sailing tomorrow.
Who says we are?
I do.
Well, you can think again. We're sailing when I say we sail, see? Getting rid of my dyspepsia is more important to me
Look
than...
Look here, I've got an idea.
Well,
I don't want to sit around on this island idling my time away for another 3 weeks till the Dutch boat comes in. Fred Blake seems to want to sail tomorrow. Very well, then. Take me on the lugger with you tomorrow to Timor or Makassar or Surabaya. Somewhere where I can pick up a steamer. I'll give you all the treatment you want, Captain.
That's a good idea, Doc. What do you say, Fred?
We can't carry passengers. We're not allowed to. You know that.
He needn't be a passenger. We can sign him on. Ship's doctor.
In any case, there's no accommodation.
Well, I guess the Doc ain't particular.
Not a bit. I'll bring my own food and drink. All I need is somewhere to sleep.
Sorry. Nothing doing.
Now, look here, young fellow, my lad. Who gives orders on this boat? You or me?
Well, if it comes down to brass tacks, I do.
Since when? Let me tell you, I'm skipper, and I say what goes.
Oh, it'd only be for 5 or 6 days. Be a sport. If you won't take me, I should be marooned here for another 3 weeks or more, depending on the weather. You'll be doing me a great favor.
Nichols and I are here on business. We can't go out of our way to land a passenger in some place we don't want to go to.
Then take me wherever you're going. You're bound to be calling in at some place where I can get a steamer.
I've said no, and that's that.
But look here, Fred. Having the Doc on board will be a chance in a million for me to cure my dyspepsia. Do you think I'm going to let a tyke like you stand in the way of that? Not likely. You get your kit packed, Doc, and come on board tomorrow morning. I'll sign you on as a member of the crew.
You'll do nothing of the sort. I say he's not coming. I won't have anyone on the lugger, and that's final.
Look here, I don't want to cause a quarrel between you.
There won't be no quarrel. If I hear another word out of him, I'll run the lugger straight up to North Borneo. British territory, young fellow, me lad. We'll see how you like that.
You take care. An accident doesn't happen to you.
Stick a knife in me, would you? And who's going to sail the boat then? You and them four black fellas? You make me laugh. Why, you hardly know one end of the boat from the other. I'll take no notice of him, Doc. You do as I tell you.
Well, it's not going to be very pleasant for any of us if Blake resents having me on board. I'd rather come with his agreement or not at all.
He'll give you his agreement. Won't you, Fred?
All right, have it your own way. You'd better come.
What did I tell you?
Thank you.
Anyway, it'll be better than being cooked up alone with him all the time.
That's right. It'll be company for you, my boy. You can play cribbage with the doctor. And take his money for a change.
I'm afraid I don't play cribbage.
Just my luck.
Sorry.
we'll be getting off about 10 tomorrow, Doc. That suits you?
Suits me, A1.
Righto. Then we'll see you on the lugger.
I rose early the next morning, said goodbye to Kim Ching, who told me I was a damn fool to be going on the lugger, and went down to the store to buy provisions for the journey. Shortly after 10 o'clock, we slipped out of the lagoon. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. The sun beat down on the shining sea. I settled down to read, and when I was tired of reading, I smoked cigarettes and looked at the sea and the green islands we passed. After lunch, Captain Nichols handed over the wheel to one of the crew and came and sat down beside me on an old canvas chair on deck.
Well, Doc, how does this suit you?
Down to the ground, Captain.
Not much of the ocean greyhound about the Fenton, but as good a sea boat as anyone can want. She'll stand up to anything.
I hope so.
Wait till we strike a patch of dirty weather. Then you'll see what she can do.
I shall be satisfied not to put her to the test, Captain.
Fair weather, sailor, eh?
Fairer the better.
Where's Fred?
He went down below to have a siesta, I think. He doesn't seem any more pleased to have me on board.
We had a bit of an argument last night after we left you.
Not about me, I hope.
Well, one thing led to another. He's only a kid, you know. Cocky and high-spirited.
Oh, yes.
But dang it all, I wasn't going to let him have his way over you.
Tell me more about him. He interests me. Where'd you meet him?
Sydney.
I thought he said he came from Brisbane.
Maybe he does. I don't know. To tell you the truth, there's a lot I don't know about him. He's a bit of a mystery.
In what way?
Well, between you and me and the gatepost, Doc. And, well, you won't let this go any further, will you?
Of course not.
It's all pretty fishy. But I've got a nice, easy job and good money, so I'm keeping my mouth shut. Wouldn't you?
I don't know. I don't know what the job is.
Sailing around these islands doing sweet Fanny Adams. Just keeping his nibs out of mischief.
What sort of mischief?
Ah, now you're asking. I'd like to know that myself. Do you know Sydney?
No, never been there.
Yeah, then you won't know a bar down by the harbour run by a chap called Macy. I used to go there pretty regular. Well, one night when I was having a drink on my own, I saw a fella I knew come in, a big bully of a chap, what they call a larrikin in Australia, named Orion. Could be an ugly customer if you put his back up. Paid you to keep in with him. He had something to do with politics. I'd borrowed a quid off him the last time I'd seen him, and, I was that hard up, and I still hadn't the money to pay him back. When he came into the bar, I pretended not to see him. But he saw me all right.
Well, well, Captain. I haven't seen you for quite a bit. How's the world treating you these days?
Rotten.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You still looking for a job?
Yeah. You'd think they'd jump at me, wouldn't you? Me, what's commanded more ships than you can count on the fingers of your two hands.
Oh, you're a first-rate seaman, I know that.
Steam or sail, I don't mind what it is. But can I get a job? Not a smell of one. And it's not for want of trying, I can tell you. Just sheer bad luck.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Now finish that beer and have another with me. Two beers, miss.
Look here, Ryan, I'm sorry about that quid you lent me. It's been on my mind ever since, but the truth is, I've had all I could do just to keep body and soul together.
Oh, forget it, old chap. What's a quid? I know you're all right. You're a good fella, Bill.
Tom, you mean?
Of course I do. Tom. I always get your name mixed up with another chap. Well, as I say, what's the good of having money if you can't lend it to a pal when he's down on his luck?
Yes, and I'd do the same for you, Ryan.
I know you would. Don't you give it another thought. Pay me when you can. Now, here's your beer.
Sure.
There's too many people around this bar. Can't hear oneself talk. Let's go over there in the corner.
Righto.
Ah, this is better. Now, sit down, old chap. That's it. Oh, cheers.
Chin-chin.
So your luck's been out, has it?
Not half.
Well, you know what they say. Luck changes.
I'd like to see it.
You're going to.
How do you know that?
Because I'm going to offer you a job myself, if you'll take it.
I'll take it, no matter what it is.
That's the spirit. I knew I could count on you.
What's the job?
Can you keep your mouth shut?
Like a clam.
Then what do you say to taking a tiny little purling lugger and cruising round the islands for a bit?
Sounds all right to me. The trading?
No, just pleasure.
What?
Well, I'll tell you how it is, Bill. I mean, Tom. A young fellow I know has been working too hard. His dad's an old pal of mine, and I'm doing this to please him, you see. He's a man in a very good position. Got a lot of influence one way and another.
Politician?
Never you mind. Anyway, he's in a state over the boy. The kid's delicate. He always has been. Touch of the lungs, you know. Mm. The doctors say the best thing he can do is to have a cruise on a sailing ship, but he's got to be kept quiet and away from where there's a lot of people. Well, his dad didn't like the idea of him taking a passage on any old ship, so he's bought the lugger I spoke of. And that's the job. To sail it.
Child's play.
I'm sure it is to you. And there's no need to tie yourself down to any schedule. You don't have to hurry. Oh, you can go anywhere you like, and when you get to some island that looks as though you could stay there for a bit, well, you just stay.
And how long is this for?
Oh, I don't exactly know. That depends on the boy's health. 3 or 4 months, maybe. Maybe longer.
I see. And what do I get out of it?
200 quid when you sail, and 200 when you come back.
Oh, I'd rather 400 down.
I dare say you would. But that's not what I'm offering you.
Well, I'm not particular. Anything to oblige a friend.
Good old Bill.
Tom?
Tom.
Where's the lugger now? I'd like to have a look at her.
Oh, you can. She's not in Sydney. She's up the coast a few miles. But you've got nothing to worry about. She's in good shape.
What about her crew?
And that's all fixed. Blackfellas from Torres Strait. They brought her down from Thursday Island to sell her. They know their job.
And stores and all that?
It's all there. You've got enough food to last you 3 months without buying anything. Now, all you've got to do is to get on board and sail away.
When?
Tomorrow night.
That's a bit quick, ain't it?
Well, the boy's dad's a big businessman, you see. That's the way he does things, right on the spot. No messing about.
How do I get to the lugger?
Yeah, I was coming to that. You better meet me at the corner of Market Street tomorrow night at 10 o'clock.
Market Street, 10 o'clock.
That's it. Now, I'll pull up in me car opposite the newspaper kiosk and you just jump in quickly. I don't want to hang about. Then I'll drive you along the coast to the lugger and a dinghy will be waiting to take us out to it.
Okay.
There's just one thing I'd like to say to you.
Huh?
Well, it refers to now and later. If you don't want a knife in your back or a bullet in your guts, you better not try any monkey tricks, you see.
Don't you have no fear. When a chap treats me like a gentleman, I behave like one.
Good enough. Well, you finished your beer?
Yes.
Yeah, then you better go out the bar first. I'll wait here for a bit. Now, don't forget, 10 o'clock, corner of Market Street, opposite the kiosk. See you tomorrow, Bill.
Tom?
Yeah, I'll get it right one day. So long, Tom. Ah, well, what do you think of the lager?
It's too dark to see much. I'll tell you better in the morning.
Oh, you've got to be well out to sea by the morning.
Well, just as you like. Yes, it's a nice breeze. That's all that matters. I can do the rest of my eyes shut.
Good on you.
But, look here, Ryan.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wasn't born yesterday. Why don't you come out with it straight and tell me what it's all about?
Bill Oldsport. Ask no questions.
I can't help thinking, can I?
No, you can't help thinking. But just you believe what you're told, or I swear I'll knock your bloody teeth down your throat myself.
Well, that's straight enough, ain't it?
Now come below and meet the boy. He's in the cabin.
Fred! Yes? Yes, Captain Nichols?
Now, this is Fred Blake.
Glad to know you. Bad luck you crocking up like this.
Can't be helped.
The Sierra pull you together, though. That being likely to build up a young fellow's constitution.
Well, now, look, I must be off in a minute. So, here's the money, Captain. 200 sovereigns.
Crikey. I haven't seen gold in donkey's years. I thought only the banks had it.
Well, now you've got some.
I could do with that belt of yours, Ryan. Mm. I can't leave a lot of money like this lying about.
All right. Take the belt. Good luck. Good luck to you, Bill.
Well, Doc, believe me or believe me not, that's how I come to be on the lug with Fred Blake.
Well, I see him.
Of course, he didn't look like what he does now. That night I met him in the cabin. He was all dolled up then, in a smart blue suit, collar and tie, and brown shoes. Proper swell he looked.
But ill?
Not on your life. He was a picture of health. It was all I could do to stop myself from laughing. Bit jumpy, and I'd have said he was scared.
Scared of what?
Search me. He ain't told me a thing about himself. Not a blooming word. But I've put two and two together, and I've got a pretty shrewd idea what's at the bottom of it.
Oh?
Politics. That's why Ryan's mixed up in it. The government's pretty rocky in New South Wales. They're hanging on by the skin of their teeth. And there's an election soon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there was a scandal, they'd go out tomorrow. I shouldn't be surprised if Fred Blake wasn't the son of somebody pretty high up.
Is one of the ministers in the government called Blake?
Blake's no more his name than it is mine. But I'll bet you that he's the son or the nephew of a minister, all right. And if there'd been a stink and it come out what he'd done, the minister would lose his seat and the governor would be kicked out. So I think that's why they decided to get him out of the way for a bit.
And what do you think he did?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. Could be murder.
Murder? He's only a kid.
Maybe, but old enough to hang.
Towards evening, we sighted the island of Badu, where Captain Nichols intended to pass the night. It was a lonely-looking island, uninhabited, and to our surprise, we found a schooner already anchored there. She turned out to be a pearler from Port Darwin, and as one of the Japanese divers on board was suffering from an attack of dysentery, the captain of the schooner, an Australian, asked me for medical help. I was rowed across to the schooner. I gave the sick man an injection and returned to the Fenton, where I found Captain Nichols and Fred Blake sitting on deck playing cribbage under the light of the hurricane lamp. One of the crew was playing an accordion down below.
You fix him up all right, Doc?
I've done my best.
Did you bring the newspaper the captain promised me, the Sydney Bulletin?
Yes, he gave it me just as I left. Here it is.
Thanks. I'd like to have a look at it.
What now? We haven't finished our game.
We can finish it later. I'm going forward for a bit.
Anxious to read the paper, isn't he?
Did you ever look at it?
No, the captain gave it to me just as I was getting into the dinghy. It was too dark to read.
He acts like that everywhere we stop.
Acts like what?
Well, the first thing he asks, is there a cable or a wireless on the island? Have they any Australian newspapers? He's waiting to hear about something. I'd like to know what it is.
Well, we'll get the paper from him when he comes back and see what's in it.
Well, there's another thing I don't understand. The luck he has at cribbage. It's phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it.
No?
Night after we sailed from Sydney, he said, what about a game of cribbage? Well, we had to pass the time somehow, and I knew he'd got a good bit of money on him, so I didn't see why I shouldn't have a bit of it. I've played cribbage all my life, and I thought I got a soft thing on. Soft me eye. I haven't had one winning day since. I've lost near on £70. And it's not as if he could play. It's the devil's own luck he has.
Perhaps he plays better than you think.
Don't you believe it. What I don't know about cribbage ain't worth knowing. No, it's just confounded luck. But luck can't go on forever. It's bound to change. And when it does, you see, I'll get back all I've lost. And all he's got besides.
He's coming.
Well, let's get on with our game, Captain. Where were we?
Finished reading the paper?
Yes, there was nothing in it.
All the same, I'd like to have a look at it.
I'm afraid you can't.
What?
Well, you should have said so before. I didn't think you were interested. I chucked it overboard. Now, your take, isn't it?
Yes. 15-2.
15-4. 15-6. And 15-8. And 6 are 14. And 1 for his knob, 17.
Oh, what luck you have.
Well, Doctor, how do you feel this morning?
I think battered is the word.
A dirty night, wasn't it?
I couldn't tell you. Mercifully, I slept through it.
What? Now, how could you? It blew like the devil. There was a hell of a racket. It didn't let up until 3 o'clock this morning. We lost one of the dinghies and the jib. It was torn to shreds.
Were you on deck all night?
Yes. Yes, I thought if we foundered, I'd rather be in the open.
Well, there wouldn't have been much chance for you.
No, I know that.
Weren't you afraid?
No. No, I think if it's coming to you, it'll come. And there's nothing you can do about it. Well, what's the good of being frightened beforehand?
It's a question of age, I think. The old are more easily frightened than the young. And that's rather funny when you come to think of it, because they've so much less to lose. They've had their lives. Youth still has its life before it.
I'm sorry I was so short with you when you asked if you could have a passage on this boat.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, I've been ill, you know, and my nerves are a bit jumpy. I'm not crazy about people I don't know.
I can understand that.
I don't want you to think that I'm just a larrikin.
I don't.
This isn't the sort of life I'm used to, you know.
Oh?
No, I was studying to be an accountant when my health broke down.
Shall I tell you something?
Yeah?
When some incident has shattered the career you've mapped out for yourself, a folly, a crime, or a misfortune, you mustn't think you're down and out and done for. It may even be a stroke of luck.
Why do you say that to me?
I thought it might be a useful piece of information.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe I shan't regret this in the long run. I mean, my health forcing me to take this trip with Nichols, it may save me from being cooped up in an office all my life, totting up figures.
That's what I meant.
Sort of ill wind, eh?
Exactly.
Doctor.
Yes, Captain?
You'll have to give me some more of that stuff. My dyspepsia's come on again. Something cruel. You think after I'd been to the wheel for 8 hours, I'd eat a bit of cold sausage and a slice of cheese without suppling for it? Damn it, all a man must eat.
I'll mix you something in advance in a minute.
I'm just going over to the gate to have a word with Obu. You'll find me there.
Yes, all right.
You know, you never can tell with people, can you? Of all the rotten skunks I've met, I've never met one to beat Nichols. He's as crooked as you make them. He'd do his own brother down if he got the chance.
I think he probably would.
There isn't a decent thing about him. And yet, you should have seen him last night. Now, I've done a bit of sailing, and I give you my word, I've never seen a boat handled like he handled this one. If we're here now, it's to him we owe it.
I'm quite sure of that.
Yeah, it was a near thing once or twice, but he was as cool as a cucumber. He even made a joke about us feeding the fishes. Well, he's got nerve, all right. I take my hat off to him. But if he thought there was £20 to be made by doing us in, you and me, do you think he'd hesitate?
No.
Yeah. Well, how do you explain that?
Oh, I don't know. People aren't all white or all black.
I suppose not. But all the same, it's funny that a chap who's nothing but a born crook should have all that pluck. I hate him. And yet last night I couldn't help admiring him.
Human nature's never straightforward.
Yeah. It certainly isn't with Nichols. And he's conceited, too. He fancies himself at cribbage. I always beat him, but he will go on.
He says you have phenomenal luck.
Luck? No, I know about cards. He hasn't got a dog's chance playing with me.
Might be worth your while to let him win occasionally.
Why?
Might save you trouble in the end.
Trouble? Oh, don't you worry. I'm not afraid of him. If he tries any of his dirty tricks, he'll get what's coming to him.
For some 24 hours after the monsoon, which had forced us off our course, we were becalmed on a flat, motionless sea. And it wasn't until the sixth day, with just enough wind to fill our sails, that we sighted the town on the twin island of Kanda, where it had been arranged that I should leave the Fenton and pick up a steamer that called there regularly. Inquiring if there was a place in the town where I could stay till a ship called, we were directed to a small hotel not far from the harbour. No one was about. We sat down at a table on the veranda and thumped it with our fists. Presently a half-caste came out to us, but he couldn't understand anything but Dutch. He ran across the street and in a moment returned with a young man who must have been 6'3" at least. A powerful, broad-shouldered fellow with a rather ugly face, but gentle eyes, wearing neat, clean ducks. He spoke excellent English and obligingly secured a room for me in the hotel. Then we invited him to sit down and have a glass of beer with us.
Are you Dutch?
No, I'm a Dane. Eric Christensen. I represent a Danish company here.
Been here long?
4 years.
Oh, good heavens.
Oh, well, it's a fine place, really. It's the most romantic spot in the East. The firm have wanted me to move, but I begged them to let me stay on.
Well, don't look as if there was much business here. Bit getting alive, ain't it?
Yeah, it wasn't always so. In the old days, I believe there was so much traffic that sometimes the harbour was full of vessels, and they had to wait outside until there was room for them to enter.
Centre of the spice trade, was it? Cloves and nutmegs and all that sort of
thing. Yes, the old Dutch merchants were so rich here, they didn't know what to do with their money.
I've been told there's marble palaces and I don't know what all.
Well, hardly palaces, though many of the houses are built out of marble. They used to belong to the old Perkineers.
Do you get any newspapers here? English ones, I mean.
No London papers, but Frith gets a paper from Australia.
Frith? Who's he?
Oh, he's an Englishman who lives here. He gets a bundle of Sydney bulletins every mail.
Do you think he'd let me have a squint at the latest?
Of course. A mail came in 4 days ago. I'm going to see him later in the day. I'll borrow them from him and leave them here for you when I return. What name shall I give?
Mine's Blake, and this is Dr. Saunders, and Captain Nichols.
Ah, I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance. It's not often we get strangers on the island, and it's always a pleasure to me to meet English people. I hope you'll stay here long enough to let me show you round. The island is lovely.
Oh, I expect we'll be here for 2 or 3 days anyhow.
Ah, I am glad. And if there's anything I can do for you, you must please let me know.
Well, Doc, how's things? Got settled in your room all right?
Yes, thank you. It's not at all bad.
What's that paper you're reading?
The latest Sydney Bulletin. I got it from Blake only a few minutes ago.
Oh.
For some reason, he was reluctant to give it to me.
Find anything in it?
Not much. They've had an election in New South Wales, I see.
Who got in?
Labour, it seems.
Same as before. Fred say anything?
No. Except that he wasn't interested in politics.
Gives nothing away, does he?
Not a thing.
By the way, where is he?
Gone off somewhere. Told me to tell you he'd see you later on board.
Looking for a girl. I don't blame him. Though I don't know what he thinks he's going to find in a place like this. It's risky, you know.
Tell me, have you ever heard of someone called Patrick Hudson?
Patrick Hudson. Yes. Yes, there was a fellow by that name what come to a sticky end in Sydney.
That's the man.
Yeah, not so very long before we sailed. The papers was full of it.
What exactly happened?
He was shot.
Suicide?
No, they said he couldn't have done it himself. There'd been a fight and the room was in an hell of a mess. They found him lying in a pool of blood on the floor.
Who was he? I mean, what sort of man?
Rough diamond, they say. Been a railway worker and worked his way up. Took to politics and all that. He was a member for some place. Labour, of course.
Something about it here. About his wife.
Oh? What'd you say?
She's just hanged herself. There's an account of the inquest.
Yes, yes. A lot of people thought she'd done it, but they couldn't prove nothing against her.
The jury found she'd committed suicide while temporarily insane. Now, they say, no one will ever solve the mystery of Patrick Hudson's death.
Looks as though she did him in, don't it? Her conscience must have haunted her. Nasty thing, a conscience.
Do you suffer from one, Captain?
Good old Doc. You will have your joke, won't you? You know what I suffer from. Dyspepsia.
The following afternoon, just before sunset, Eric Christensen called for us in an old car and drove us up to Frith's house, where we'd been invited for supper. It was about 3 miles out of the town, and the road wound pleasantly through plantations of portly and profitable nutmeg trees. Frith came out to meet us as we drove up to the house. He was a rather fat man, shabbily dressed in khaki shorts and an open shirt, and badly in need of a shave. He led us into a very large room which served as a parlour and dining room. A tiny little old man, wrinkled, battered and bowed, with eyes as darting and mischievous as a monkey's, got up from a chair and stared at us as we came in.
This is Swan. He's by way of being my father-in-law.
Mr. Swan is his feed.
Yeah. I came out here 50 years ago. I were mate of sailing vessel.
I'm a seafaring man myself, sir.
I've been pretty well most things in my day. I've been captain of schooner and slave trade.
Blackbird Inn. There was a nice little bit of money to be picked up that way in the old days.
I've been blacksmith, I've been trader, I've been planter. I don't know what I haven't been. I've had a lot of money in my time, haven't I, George?
So I've always heard.
Got nothing now but this plantation. Never mind, it gives me enough to live on, and that's all that matters. I've had 4 wives and children, more children than you can count.
Grab a scotch, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Give him Tata Rum. If he's a sailor man, he don't want that stinking whiskey of yours. Whiskey being ruined in the Pacific. If everybody stuck to rum and sails, things wouldn't be what they are now, not by a long chalk.
You're dead right, sir. I shouldn't be at all surprised if it ain't whiskey what's played havoc with my digestion. I'm a martyr to dyspepsia, you know. Have been for years.
I never know what it is to have pain in my tummy. Rheumatism's my trouble.
Well, has that something? So, Doctor?
Apparently.
Well, you can't have anything worse than dyspepsia. You can take my word for it.
We will, Captain.
I'd be a rich man now if it hadn't been for my dyspepsia.
Money is not everything.
Well, I'm not saying it is.
As long as I have a roof over my head and 3 meals a day, I'm content. Leisure's the important thing.
Bone idle. That's where you are, Judge. You think of nothing but books. Read, read, read.
Only by reading can you come to know the truth.
Truth won't put 3 meals a day on table. Only money will do that.
I've a great respect for money myself, sir.
He looks a crook to me. Yeah. Where you find him, Eric?
Oh, you have had too much rum, Mr. Swan.
Oh, no offence, Mick.
No offence taken, sir. I'd ever so much sooner somebody called me a crook than a fool. What does a fellow mean when he says you're a crook, eh? He means you're cleverer than him, that's all.
I know a crook when I see one. Been a bit of a crook myself at times.
When it comes to that, who hasn't?
Ah, here's Louise. That looks as if supper's nearly ready. Come along, would you? Come and meet Eric's friends. This is my daughter. There are, I suppose, very few occasions in life when someone we meet suddenly takes our breath away by their beauty. But this, I confess, happened to me when I looked at Frith's daughter. She was wearing a sarong of green silk embroidered with gold that fitted her slim body like a sheath, tight over the lower part of her young breasts and tight over her narrow hips. Her bosom and legs were bare, and her skin was burned by the sun to a rich honey colour. Her hair was ash blonde. She had an indolent grace and slenderness that reminded me of one of those goddesses whose statues adorn the museums. It was entrancing to come upon her in this tropic scene. Almost at once, a Malay servant brought in a great bowl of soup, and we sat down at the table. Louise sat next to Fred Blake, and one had only to see her easy gaiety and her animation to know how much she liked his company. He was not shy with women, and evidently knew how to entertain them. And looking at him as he talked and laughed with her, one was very conscious of his charm. When dinner was finished, Louise took Swan by the arm and led the wizened gnome out of the room to bed. What about a game of bridge? You gentlemen play?
I do. I don't know about the doctor and Fred.
I'll make up a form.
Yeah, he plays good game.
I don't play.
Oh, that's all right. We can manage without you. Louise will be back in a minute. You can entertain her.
I shall be delighted.
Well, gentlemen, cut for partners.
Looks as though it's you and me for it, Doc.
That hardly inspires me with confidence, Captain, after your exploits at cribbage.
Perhaps my luck'll change.
I hope so.
Oh, we're having a game, Louise.
So I see.
You look after Mr. Blake, eh?
Do you dance, Mr. Blake?
Whenever I get the chance.
Will it disturb you, Father, if we put a tune on the gramophone?
Won't disturb me.
Nor me.
No, a bit of music's nice.
We can dance out on the veranda.
Here do we go. It's one art.
Two clubs.
Two hearts.
This is wonderful.
Don't you play bridge?
Yes, of course.
Why aren't you playing then?
I didn't want to. Do you blame me? You are lovely.
You're awfully good looking.
Can this is?
No.
I want to kiss you. May I?
Yes.
Crazy about you, Louise. Kiss me.
This is where I live, Doctor.
What an attractive room. I noticed the marble you spoke of.
Yes. This was one of the old Perkineer's houses. Oh, please sit down.
Thank you. Well, it's good of you to arrange such an agreeable evening for us, Christensen, and to finish it off like this for the night camp.
Well, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to my house. Do you take soda with your whiskey?
Please. He was telling me about Frith. He showed me some of his books before we left. Unusual collection to find in the house of a planter in the Far East. Studies Indian religion and Indian philosophy, he tells me.
Yeah, he was a schoolmaster at one time in England.
Really? How did he find his way here?
Oh, he read about this island, you know, a lot. And in some old travel books, I believe. When he was young, he got it into his head that it was the one place in the world he wanted to live in.
Strange.
Took him about 12 years to reach here. Took all sorts of jobs on the way. In the Malay States, Borneo, Calcutta, and Singapore. I believe he once ran a hotel in Bali.
What we should call a rolling stone.
Yes. Then finally he come here and got work with a shipping company. Then he fell in love with Oldest Fun's daughter and married her.
I see.
She was a wonderful person. Tall and big and fair like one of the Rhine maidens. I can't tell you how kind she was to me. I used to spend all my spare time up there. It was a godsend for me to have that house to go to. But I enjoyed talking to Frith, too. He taught me so much. It was he who made me understand the magic of the East. You know, people come here and they see nothing. Is that all, they say? And they go home again. But Frith, he talked about the East so that she saw the grandeur and the beauty of it. I shall always be grateful to him.
And the girl?
Louise. She was only a child when I came to this island. But then they sent her away to Auckland to school. She was there till last year, until her mother died. Seemed funny to me. Then she went away. She was a child who used to sit on my knee, and she came back. She was a young woman. She's 18 now.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you in confidence that we are engaged.
Oh, congratulations.
Not officially, so I'd sooner you didn't mention it to him.
Of course not.
Oh, it's fun, it's willing enough, but her father says she's too young. I suppose she is, but that's not his real reason for objecting. I'm afraid he doesn't think me good enough.
Fathers can be very obtuse. Who does he want to marry?
Oh, I think he has visions of a rich English lord arriving one day in his yacht and falling madly in love with her.
Oh, yes.
The nearest approach so far is young Fred Blake in a pearling lugger. Still, I don't mind waiting. When you love anyone like I love Louise, year or two, well, they don't matter. We've got all life before us. She's beautiful, isn't she?
Extremely.
And, you know, beauty is the least of her qualities. She's got a head on her shoulder. She's got the same practical sense that her mother had. The natives, they know it's useless to try any tricks with her. Makes me laugh sometimes to see the way she manages them. There's so much common sense. You'd hardly get that impression from just meeting her, would you?
No, she struck me... How shall I describe it? As being rather withdrawn, rather aloof.
Yes, yes, I know what you mean. She has that quality, too. Seems to me so rare and beautiful. A flame-like spirit that's not quite human. Like a goddess that keeps her apart, as you say. Now, I'm not jealous of it. I'm not afraid of it. I love her so much that I almost regret that she cannot always keep it. And I feel that she will lose it when she comes to be a wife and a mother. That is why I feel rather ashamed that I should not go to her as pure as she will come to me.
Oh, forgive me, but you mustn't be silly.
Is it silly? When you love someone like Louise, isn't it rather degrading to think that you've been with other women? I feel unworthy enough of her as it is.
Oh, my dear boy, if you'll allow me to say so, that's nonsense.
Why?
Well, surely the wise man combines the pleasures of the senses and the pleasures of the spirit. I've never had any sympathy with the ascetic attitude. Life is short, nature is hostile, and man is ridiculous. I don't think there's any more to be said. Except that I must finish my drink and go.
Well, Doc... Feel like a game of piquet this evening?
Why not?
Must do something to pass the time, mustn't we?
I had some good news. I was down at the harbour this afternoon. They told me the Princess Juliana's due in on Saturday. She'll take me as far as Surabaya.
Oh, yeah, yes.
What about you? How long are you seeing him?
God knows. His nibs doesn't seem to want to move. Seems he's taking a fancy to the place. He's always stopping on here for a bit and then going on to Batavia. Suits me. Might as well be here as anywhere else.
Good evening.
Hello, Christensen. Where have you been all day? I haven't seen you around.
I had to visit plantation we've got over at the other end of Highland.
Fred Blake was looking for you earlier on. I think he wanted you to go swimming with him.
Oh, I'm sorry I wasn't here. Where is he now?
Courting, I expect.
Oh, not much chance of that here.
Don't you be too sure. Good-looking young fella, you know. The girls fall for him. Between you and me and the gatepost, I should have said he clicked good and proper the other night.
Oh, did he? Who did?
That girl up at Fritz.
Louise? Oh, no.
Well, I don't know. She came and had a look at the boat with him this morning, and I know he doled himself up something fierce tonight. Oiled his hair, put on a silk shirt and a clean pair of ducks. I asked him what he was made of, and he told me to mind my own bloody business.
Fritz was down here this morning. Maybe he asked Blake to go and have supper with him tonight.
Fred had his supper on the Fenton.
In any case, he wouldn't be at Sponsor's late as this. They go to bed at 10.
Maybe he's gone to bed, too. If you ask me, that girl looked as though she knew a thing or two. Wouldn't surprise me if they wasn't both comfortably tucked up together at this very minute. And very nice, too. I wish I was in his place.
It's not a bad plan to judge others by oneself. But not when one's a mangy cur.
Oh, well, why have I said anything to offend you? Oh, I didn't know the lady was a friend of yours.
Good night, Doctor.
Well, well, well. What was all that about? Blew right up, didn't he?
Wanting to commit suicide, Captain? One blow from that great fist of his, and he wouldn't have to bother any more about dyspepsia or anything else.
Well, what was he so upset about? Sweet on the girl himself?
Well, there are men who object to hearing their girlfriend spoken of in that way.
Oh, come on, fair Doc. If a girl's easy, a chap likes to know. Well, there's a chance for him, ain't there? Stands to reason.
You know, you're one of the dirtiest tykes I've ever met, Captain.
that's a compliment in a way, ain't it?
I didn't intend it to be.
Funny part is, you don't like me any the less if I am, do you? Seems that proves something.
What?
That you ain't exactly a saint yourself. Now, come on, let's deal the cards. And how about some beer while we're at it? Hey, boy!
It was after midnight when we finished our game of piquet and Captain Nichols returned to the Fenton. I went up to my room, undressed and got into bed. At first I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking of Eric Christensen and was reminded of the look of disgust and contempt and rage on his face when the captain had made his coarse references to Louise. I wondered, too, whether there was any truth in what Nichols had said about Fred Blake and the girl. And if so, whether I should not take it on myself to warn Blake and keep him away from her. Eventually, I turned off the light and was on the point of dropping off to sleep when I heard someone trying the handle of my door, which was locked. On opening it, I saw the night watchman holding a lantern, and just beside him, Fred Blake.
It's me, Doctor. I want to see you. It's frightfully important. Let me come in.
Oh, wait a minute until I light the lamp.
Here you are, Watchman. Thank you. Something dreadful has happened. You must come to Eric's at once. There's been an accident.
What do you mean?
He shot himself.
Good God.
I've just come from his house. He's dead.
You sure?
Yes.
Well, if he's dead, what's the good of my coming?
He can't be left lying like that. Come and see him. Oh, my God. Well, perhaps you can do something.
What can I do? Who's there?
Nobody. He's lying there alone. I can't bear it. You must do something. For God's sake, come.
You need a drink. Now, remember, we're in a foreign country. We don't want to run up against the authorities. The Dutch aren't very easy people to deal with, I believe. Yeah. Drink this. If he's dead, you can do no good. Neither can I. We better keep out of it. Did anyone see you there?
Where?
At his house.
No. I was only there a minute. I rushed straight round here. No one saw me.
What made you go to Christensen's house?
I had to. I had something to say to him that couldn't wait.
Well, you better tell me.
It's that girl up at Old Swan's. Louise.
Well, what about her?
I had a bit of fun with her tonight.
Fun?
You know what I mean. She took a fancy to me the first moment she saw me. I knew that. I took a fancy to her, too. This morning she came and had a look over the boat with me.
So Nichols told me.
Now, the old fool wouldn't leave us alone for more than a minute. Anyhow, I said I'd go up to the plantation tonight and meet her in the garden by the pool when everyone else had gone to bed. We bathed in the moonlight. Then I went to her room. Afterwards, I put on my clothes. I carried my shoes. I didn't want to make a sound crossing the veranda. She went out first to see that the coast was clear. Then I slipped over the rail and jumped down into the garden. Before I knew what had happened, someone grabbed hold of me and put their hand round my throat.
Christensen?
Yes. Well, you know how strong he is, like a ox. I thought he was going to choke the life out of me. I was paralyzed. I couldn't even struggle. I thought I was done for. Then suddenly, he let go of me and gave me a great clout over the head. And I just fell like a log. He never said a word, but he turned, went off through the plantation at about 100 miles an hour. And after he'd gone, I made my way to the road and started walking back to the town. I felt I must see him at any price.
Why?
To put myself right with him. If it had been anybody else but Eric, I shouldn't have cared a damn, but... Well, he's so straight himself. I couldn't bear him to think that I wasn't straight, too.
Goodness, can be rather shattering, can't it? It's inclined to knock human relationships in.
Eric's one in 1,000. I've never met anyone like him before. You could trust him with your life. He wouldn't do anyone down. But what Louise and I had done was only human nature. I couldn't help myself. Neither could she. I didn't want him to think that
But you were rather a cad.
Now, you're old. It's all very well for you to talk like that. You don't know what it is.
Go on. So you made up your mind to go and see him. What then?
Well, I went straight to his house. The door was open, so I walked in. I called out to him, but there was no answer. I struck a match, went along the passage to his room. I knocked on the door. There wasn't a sound. I struck another match and opened the door, and then I almost jumped out of my skin. He was lying on the floor at my feet. If I'd taken a step more, I'd have tumbled over him. I thought he'd fainted or was drunk or something. I went across to the table and lit the lamp, and then I held it over him. Oh, my God. The whole side of his head was shot away. He had a revolver clenched in his hand. There was blood all over the place.
It was horrible. I can never forget it as long as I live. What in God's name made him do it?
I think it's obvious. He was engaged to Louise.
What? Eric?
Their engagement was unofficial. No one knew about it.
And how did you?
He told me so himself in confidence.
She never said a word. Oh, God, if I'd known that, I wouldn't have touched her with a barge pole. Oh, why didn't he kill me or her instead of himself?
Curious, isn't it?
She meant nothing to me. I'd never have thought of fooling about with her if I'd known.
She meant everything to him. He was in love with her.
Oh, life is damnable. You start a thing and you don't think twice about it, and then there's hell to pay. I think there's a curse on me. I make trouble wherever I go. I wish I was dead.
You'll get over it, you know. There's nothing one doesn't get over.
I swear it's not all my fault. She's as much to blame as I am.
Oh?
Well, why did she leave me alone, eh? Can you imagine a girl who was engaged to a chap like Eric going to bed with the first man she sees? Yes, well, that's one thing. He was well rid of her.
You're talking rubbish. Tell me, when you left the house, did you leave the lamp burning?
Yes. Yes, I never thought. I just turned and ran. Ran here as quick as I could.
Oh, well, he could just as well have shot himself with the light burning as in the darkness. It's odd that none of the boys should have heard anything.
I suppose they were asleep. They live at the back of the house anyway. What am I to do?
Now, first, I suggest you try to get some sleep.
How can I sleep when I think of Eric lying there? Oh, God!
I can help you to sleep. I'll give you something. Sit in that chair. I got my hypodermic needle and gave him a shot of morphine. Then I put out the lamp, got back under the mosquito curtain into bed. In the morning, when I awoke, he was still on the long chair in my room, sleeping peacefully. I left him there and went downstairs to have my breakfast. I'd scarcely sat down at the table when the manager of the hotel came into the room with a Dutch official in a white uniform with brass buttons, who clicked his heels and addressed me in English.
You are Dr. Saunders?
I am.
I'm sorry to tell you that a Danish trader called Christensen has shot himself.
Christensen? Oh, that tall fellow?
The same. He was found by his boys an hour ago. I am in charge of the inquiry. Mr. Van Rijk, the manager here, informs me that Christensen came to the hotel last night to visit you.
That's quite true, he did.
About 11 o'clock?
Yes, it was quite late. Captain Nichols and I were sitting out on the veranda having a game of cards when he called.
Did he stay long?
No, only a few minutes.
Had he been drinking?
Good heavens, no. He's quite sober.
I have never seen him drunk myself. Did you notice anything strange in his manner? Did he give you the impression that he was disturbed about anything?
Well, I don't know him very well, you know. I only arrived here about a week ago.
So I understand.
I shouldn't have thought he was the kind of man who'd do anything so desperate. But one can never tell.
Mr. Van Rijk tells me that the night watchman of the hotel admitted a young Englishman to your room late last night, after midnight.
That is so. Mr. Blake is traveling with Captain Nichols on board the Fenton, now anchored in your harbour. He was taken unwell suddenly with stomach pains. He came at once to see me. I gave him an injection and let him sleep on the chair in my room. He's still there. I haven't disturbed him.
I understand that he was friendly with Christensen. Perhaps he can tell us something.
Well, I should doubt it. In any case, he didn't see Christensen at all yesterday. He wasn't here when Christensen called last night, and Christensen told me that he'd been visiting a plantation on the other side of the island all day.
What is your own explanation of this tragedy, Doctor?
I'm afraid I can't help you.
Probably the old story.
What's that, officer?
It's a mistake for a foreigner to live alone in a place like this. They brood, they get homesick, the heat is killing. And then one day they can't stand it anymore, so they put a bullet through their heads. I've seen it happen before. I'm sorry for the poor fellow. He was very quiet and never gave any trouble. You could not help liking him.
I agree with you. He seemed to be an altogether unusual person.
But it would have been better for him to have taken one of the girls of the island into his house. It would have made hardly any difference to his expenses and perhaps saved him from this.
Perhaps.
Doctor, I am obliged to you.
Not at all.
I shall not disturb you any longer. And the young Englishman...
Mr. Blake?
I shall not disturb him either. Let him sleep.
Erik Christensen was buried the following afternoon. The funeral was attended by a few of his Dutch friends, George Frith, Fred Blake, Captain Nichols, and myself. After it was over, Frith invited me to drive out with him to his house for a drink. As it would be my last opportunity of saying farewell before sailing on the Princess Juliana the following day, I accepted his invitation. I was also curious to see Louise. When we reached the house, she came down the steps to greet us, and while Frith was called away to attend to some urgent matter on the plantation, she led me into the sitting room, where the jalousies were drawn against the glare of the setting sun, and the light was subdued and cool. She bore no sign that she had passed through an emotional crisis. She was as calm and possessed as when I'd seen her first.
Father asked me to give you a drink until he returns. Will you have a Stenger?
Thank you.
If Grandpa comes in, please don't say anything about Eric. We haven't told him. We were afraid it would upset him. But perhaps he knows. One can never tell. Old people have a strange way of knowing things.
Christensen's death must have been a great shock to him.
Yes. I owe a great deal to him. When I was a child, I used to worship him.
Were you in love with him?
With one part of me, perhaps. Why do you ask?
If you weren't wholly in love with him, why did you become engaged to him? He talked to me a great deal about you one night. He told me in confidence that he was going to marry you.
I promised Mother I would before she died.
Oh, I see.
I was very fond of him. I knew him so well. I was very much at home with him. I think if he'd wanted to marry me just when my mother died and I was so unhappy, I might have loved him. But he didn't want to take advantage of the feelings I had then. He thought I was too young. And Father didn't very much want me to marry him.
So I gathered. But in spite of that, you were going to marry him one day.
Yes, I suppose we should have married in the end, being quite happy, if nothing had happened.
And if we hadn't come to the island, you might never have met Fred Blake.
Does he know I was engaged to Eric?
He does now, I told him.
Was that why he wouldn't see me when I called at the hotel yesterday?
I imagine so. Why did you come to see him?
I couldn't believe it when they told me Eric had shot himself. I wanted to know if it was possible that he knew about Fred.
He saw him coming out of your room that night. He was in the garden when Fred Blake jumped over the rail of your veranda. That's why he shot himself. You were to blame.
No, I wasn't.
What makes you think that? He was very much in love with you.
It wasn't me he loved, really. It was my mother. Only he didn't know it. But she knew it, and at the end, I think she loved him, too. What he loved in me was what he loved in her. Eric killed himself because I'd fallen short of the ideal he made of me. Don't you think if he'd loved me, he would have been tolerant?
Men are very peculiar in that respect.
Yes, and it's stupid the importance they attach to the pleasures of the body. White men, at least. If he'd really loved me, then he might have killed me. Or he might have forgiven me. But it was his ideal he loved. He wanted to imprison me in it. He didn't care who I was. He couldn't take me as I am. What right have people to make an image after their own heart and force it on you and be angry if it doesn't fit you?
Aren't you asking to change human nature?
All that's happened is terrible, and my heart is heavy. But I don't grieve. At the back of my mind, I know that it's given me freedom. I'm even free of Fred Blake. I shan't see him again. Perhaps if he'd been staying a month on the island instead of just a few days, this would never have happened.
How do you mean?
I should have thought there was plenty of time. And if I'd seen him every day for a month, I dare say I shouldn't have bothered about him. In the end.
What will you do now?
I'm young. I can wait. When Grandpa dies, this will be mine. Perhaps I shall sell it. Father wants to go to India. The world is wide. But I am I. I don't want to dream anyone else's dream. I want to dream my own.
Frith joined us presently, and when we'd finished our drinks, we walked across the compound to his car. I got in beside him, and as we started off for the town, I looked back at the house. Louise was standing at the top of the stairs waving to us. The last ray of the sun found its way through the heavy leafage of the Canary trees and touched her fair hair with gold. She was like an enchantress in an old tale whom men loved to their destruction. Enigmatic and serene, waiting for what in due course would befall her. I wondered what it would be. That evening, my last on the island, Fred Blake joined me for a drink on the veranda of the hotel.
Nichols and I are sailing first thing in the morning. We're going on to Batavia. I shall be glad to get out of here, and I wish to hell we'd never come. I suppose that's what you call fate.
Not necessarily. I doubt if our destinies are so important that the fate should make such a to-do about them.
You're a queer fellow, Doc. I'm hanged if I can make you out. When one's talking to you, somehow nothing seems to matter a damn. Isn't there anything that makes a difference to you?
Yes, whiskey. There you are.
Cheers.
Bon voyage.
What, with Nichols?
As this is the last time we're likely to see one another, won't you tell me now what happened?
About Eric, I've told you.
No, about yourself. Something made you clear out of Sydney in a hurry. What was it?
Oh, that. Yes, I wanted to talk about it to someone. Sometimes I could hardly prevent myself from telling Nichols. Oh, thank heaven I wasn't such a fool. But isn't it bloody to think that one's life should be ruined by an accident? It's so damned unfair. When I think of all I had to look forward to. My people are in a good position. My father's in one of the best firms in Sydney. He was going to buy me a partnership. I'd have made plenty of money and had a good life. I'd probably have gone into politics as he did. I'd have married sooner or later, settled down in a nice home. If anyone had a chance, I had. And now, look at me.
Well, you've got youth, you've got some education, and you're not bad looking.
That's what makes me laugh. If I'd been downright ugly, I'd be in Sydney now. Oh, well, that sounds conceited, I expect, but, you know, I've always been able to get any girl I wanted, I suppose, because of my looks. I thought it was rather a lark. After all, you're only young once. I didn't see why I shouldn't have all the fun I could get. Do you blame me?
No, the only people who would are those who've never had your opportunities.
And then, of all the rotten luck, I had to run into that woman.
What woman?
One weekend, a chap brought his wife to spend the day up at our house. His name was Hudson, Patrick Hudson.
Oh, aye.
He was a chap with a lot of influence in politics. Father said he could make all the difference at the election. So, of course, we had to make a fuss of him. I was told to look after Mrs. Hudson. She was nothing much to look at. Thin and scraggy and tall. She must have been over 40. Well, when I was showing her round the garden, she asked me if I'd have tea with her one afternoon the following week at the Pacific. Do you know Sydney?
No, I don't.
Well, the Pacific's a place where they have dancing. I couldn't very well say no, because of father and everything, so I went. She knew how to dance, I'll say that for her. But there are ways and ways of dancing. You know what I mean?
Not quite.
She was shameless. Of course, I saw what she was up to, and I couldn't help laughing, but I thought if she wanted me to play that game, I'd play it. In the end, we went to a place I knew and had a bit of a rough and tumble. I thought that would be the finish. Not on your life. She said she'd fallen in love with me the first time she saw me. Well, I tried to shake her off, but I couldn't. She was on the phone at all hours of the day, ringing up the house or the office and leaving messages for me until I began to get scared. Well, she didn't mind what risks she took.
Didn't her husband mind?
Oh, Pat Hudson, well, he treated me just like a boy. He never took much notice of me. He probably thought it was all a joke. Well, at last I got fed up with it all. She wouldn't leave me alone. I couldn't call my soul my own. I couldn't stick it anymore. So, I told her I was sick and tired of the whole thing and it had got to stop.
And what did she say to that?
Oh, there was one hell of a scene. She screamed and cried, said she loved me and wanted to marry me and that she couldn't live without me. She was like a mad woman. I've never seen anything like it. But I didn't care. I made a bolt for it.
From Sydney, you mean?
No, from her house. I didn't go there again. Well, not for some weeks. Not until she wrote me a letter. She said she was awfully sorry she'd made all those scenes. She thought she must have been crazy, but she'd had time to calm down. Everything was all right now, and she didn't bear me any ill will. She was going off to New Zealand in 2 days' time, and would I drop in the following evening just to say goodbye and have a drink.
And you went?
Yes. Yes, I was surprised at how casual she had sounded, as though she didn't much care whether I went or not. Well, that suited me all right, so I went along to the house the next night.
Come in, Fred. Come on and sit down.
Thanks.
Pat isn't here. He's gone to Brisbane for a day or two.
Yes, I heard he was going. Father said something about it.
I'm afraid we must talk about him for a minute, though. I don't want to get into any trouble if I can help it. Things might be a little awkward.
Huh?
That's one reason why I hoped you'd come this evening.
How do you mean? Awkward.
Oh, don't worry, not for you. You're absolutely safe. But I think it's just as well we should both tell the same story, if we have to, if he should ask any questions.
You mean he knows about us?
Well, you remember that night we drove back from the beach, the last time we met?
Yes.
Well, someone saw us together and told Pat about it. He didn't like it. I said you were waiting for a friend to drive you home, and they didn't turn up, so I give you a lift. I don't think he'll mention it again, but if he does, I just want you to back me up.
Well, of course I will.
Yes, I knew you would. So, now let's forget about it, hmm? Whiskey?
Thanks.
You know, I'm really rather excited about my trip. I've never been to New Zealand, and I believe it's wonderful.
Yes, I hear.
I'm going to stay with friends. They have a lovely house with the sea. It should be fun. And the doctor says it's just what I need. A complete change. Here. Is that all right for you?
Fine.
Well, Fred, here's how.
Cheers, Florrie.
Mm. Oh, by the way, what time do you make it?
6:20.
Oh, good. Good, then I don't need to leave the house for another half hour. I'm going to pictures.
Yeah, I thought you were all dressed up.
Ah, it's a new dress. Do you like it?
Very much.
I think the colour suits me, don't you?
And the shape.
Fred.
Yes?
You know, it wouldn't hurt you to kiss me goodbye, would it?
No, I don't suppose it would.
Then why don't you?
Maybe I will, when I go.
Why not now? You may forget.
All right, Florrie. Have a nice trip. Bon voyage.
Oh, Fred, no, properly. Like you used to kiss me.
That's enough. You promised there'd be no silly business.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean there to be, but I can't help it now that I see you. Oh, Fred, come on, be kind to me, please. Just this once. It'll be the last time I'm going away tomorrow. You won't be bothered with me anymore. Will you... You do like me a little, don't you?
Well, yes, of course.
Well, then put your arms around me. Come on. I don't blame you for anything, Fred, really, I don't. Except for being so absurdly good-looking. I know I'm a foolish woman, I know, but I can't help that. I love you. I love you. Oh, kiss me. Kiss me, darling. Oh, huh? Patrick!
What the hell, you dirty little swine?
Oh, no, don't, Pat, don't.
Get out of my way!
Pat! Let go! You tell him!
I'll beat the hell out of him!
Pat! Oh. I think it's all right. He's dead.
You said he'd gone away.
No, he didn't go. He had a telephone message.
How do you know?
I sent it.
You? What for? My God, you mean this was a put-up job?
No, don't be silly. What you've got to do now is keep your head. Go on home. Have supper quietly with your family so nothing had happened. Well, I'm going to the cinema like I said I would.
You are mad. Stark, raving mad.
No, I'm not. I know what I'm doing. Now, you'll be all right if you just do what I say. See, you just behave as if nothing had happened and leave it all to me. Oh, you've got nothing to be afraid of. I won't let him touch you. You're mine. And I know how to look after what belongs to me. I love you. And I want you. And when it's all over and forgotten, we'll be married. What a fool you were to think that I was ever gonna give you up.
I shall never forget the look on her face as she said that. It made my blood run cold. I was in a trap, and there was no way of getting out of it.
Who fired the shots, Mrs. Hudson?
No, I did.
You were carrying a revolver.
Oh, of course I wasn't. When we were struggling on the floor, and I thought he was going to kill me, I suddenly felt a revolver put in my hand. I swear I didn't know what I was doing. It all happened in a second. I twisted my arm and fired. And then I fired again. My God. The nerve that woman had got. I was trembling like a leaf. She was as cool as a cucumber.
Did you go home, as she told you to?
Yes. Yes, I wanted time to think. But before I went to bed that night, I made a clean breast of the whole thing to my father. I told him that I'd only fired in self-defense, which was true. He said the thing had got to be hushed up. He couldn't afford a scandal with the election coming on. I should have to get out of the country. That's why he bought the lugger and why I came away with Nichols. I stayed in bed for over a week, pretending I had fever, until the night Father drove me along the coast to where the lugger was anchored.
Well, in the meantime, what about the police? What conclusion did they come to?
They reckoned that the crime had a political motive. Hudson was known to have a lot of enemies.
They didn't suspect Mrs. Hudson.
They may have done, but if they did, they couldn't pin anything on her. She had a perfect alibi. She said she'd spent the evening at the cinema, came home, and found her husband dead. The papers said she made an awful scene, screaming and crying and rushing out of the house to call the neighbors when she discovered him. She could prove she'd been at the cinema. She'd part of the ticket still in her bag, and she'd spoken to two people she knew who were there. She said she'd gone to the cinema because, believing her husband had left for Brisbane, she didn't particularly want to stay in the house alone. The police asked her why he hadn't gone to Brisbane. She said she'd no idea. They couldn't prove a thing against her.
Then why she just hanged herself?
How did you know that?
I read about the inquest and the copy of the Sydney paper you gave me.
It gave me an awful turn when I read it. She was horrible and I hated her. Yet I suppose she must have been in love with me to do what she did.
Why do you think she did it? I mean, take her life.
Perhaps my father had something to do with it.
Your father?
I don't think he'd be satisfied till he got even with her. I shouldn't put it past him to have told her that I'd confessed everything and the police were going to arrest her.
Plausible. But she chose an unpleasant way of doing away with herself.
She's ruined my life. And it was only the merest chance that I met her. What the hell does it all mean? Why are we here? Where are we going? What can we do, any of us?
My dear boy, you don't expect me to answer that, do you? Ever since men picked up a glimmer of intelligence, they've been asking those questions. What is it the Bible says? Short, therefore, is man's life. And narrow is the corner of the earth wherein he dwells. You must take life as you find it, I'm afraid.
I'm fed up with life as I find it.
You know, the most valuable thing I've learned is to regret nothing. Oddly enough, most misfortunes have their compensations. With a certain humor and a good deal of horse sense, one can make a fairly good job of what is, after all, a matter of very small consequence. You're a stranger in the world, yet. Presently, like a man on a desert island, you'll learn to do without what you can't get and make the most of what you can.
I'll either have life on my own terms or not at all. No, I don't want your resignation.
You may one day.
Never. Never.
At dawn the next morning, the Fenton slipped out of the harbour, and that was the last I saw of Fred Blake. But not of Captain Nichols. By an odd coincidence, on my way through Singapore a month later, I was sitting on the little dusty terrace of my hotel reading when I heard someone call me. I looked up, and to my astonishment, I saw the captain coming towards me.
Well, well, well. This is a small world, ain't it, Doc?
It certainly is.
I was passing by and saw you sitting there. I come to see how you do you?
Oh, sit down and have a drink.
Don't mind if I do.
Good heavens, you've had your teeth out.
Yes, I promised you I would, didn't I? You was quite right. The dentist said he wasn't surprised I suffer from dyspepsia. It's a miracle I've gone as long as I have, according to him. They were rotten. Rotten, every one of them.
And certainly didn't add to your beauty. Where's Fred Blake?
Come to a sticky end, poor chap.
What do you mean?
Fell overboard one night. Or jumped over. Nobody knows.
In a storm?
No, sea was as flat as a mill pond.
Then how could he go overboard without anyone noticing? What about the man at the helm?
Well, we dove to for the night. Fred had been drinking very heavy. Nothing to do with me, of course. But I told him he'd better go easy. Mind your own bloody business, he said. All right, I says, go your own way. It ain't going to put me off me sleep. Next morning, he was gone.
When did this happen?
A week ago, last Tuesday. Very awkward it was for me, too. He'd won all my money at cribbage. We played a lot after we left you, and I tell you, the luck he had was something unbelievable. I began to think there was something phony about it, but I couldn't see how it was done.
No.
Well, to cut a long story short, by the time we got to Batavia, he took every penny off me I'd got for the cruise.
Well, you told me that was 200 sovereigns.
So it was. Well, after the accident, I broke open his strong box.
Why did you do that?
Well, I had to see if there was an address or anything so I could communicate with the sorrowing relatives. I'm very particular about that sort of thing. And, you know, there wasn't a shilling there. It was as empty as the palm of my hand. The dirty little tyke must have carried all his money he's built. And he'd gone overboard with a lot. And mind you, it was my money, most of it.
That must have galled you.
You can't tell me he could win like that playing on the square. Crooked he was. I never liked him. Not from the beginning. I don't know what I should have done if I hadn't been able to sell the lugger to a chink in Penang. I made him give me a good price, so I haven't done too badly after all. Life's a rum, ain't it, Doc? Like a bloody seesaw. Up and down, up and down.
It's a queer story, Captain. I wonder if there's any truth in it.
Here, Doc, what do you mean by that?
What I say. I suppose you didn't by any chance push Fred Blake overboard when he was drunk?
Well, that's a nice way to talk. It's the first time anyone's ever accused me of
doing the dirty on someone, Captain, is it? You didn't know he kept his money in his belt. You thought it was in his strong box. It was quite a package for a bum like you. I wouldn't put it past you.
Good old Doc. Still the same. Haven't changed, have you? Look here. What about that drink you were going to give me?
You shall have it, you scoundrel. Wait up!
In the Narrow Corner by Somerset Maugham, adapted for broadcasting by Howard Agg, the part of Dr. Saunders was played by Raymond Huntley, Captain Nichols by George Merritt, and Fred Blake by Dennis Hawthorne. Eric Christensen, William Eagle, Louise Frith, Sheila Grant, Mrs. Hudson, Barbara Mitchell, George Frith, Peter Pratt, Ryan, Peter Claughton, Kim Ching, Will Layton, Swan, Geoffrey Wincott, Patrick Hudson, Louis Stringer, and the Dutch official, Anthony Vickers. The play, which was recorded, was produced by Martin C. Webster.